With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This week's podcast is kindly sponsored by Who Knows Wins. This is a new social sports game where mates, family and colleagues pit their wits for real money. Use the free app to play directly against your pals in your own custom league or join the thriving community of players in one of our existing competitions like this week's Pick 10 League with a guaranteed £6,000 prize fund. Keep on top of the action with live updates and bask in the glory with live chat. You don't need to get all the predictions right. You just need to get more than anyone else. Guaranteed winners every day. Download the app now from the link below in the description. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be. Welcome back to the Same Old Arsenal podcast, Four Men and a Mic edition. I hope you're all well. Hello to everyone watching us live. And of course, hello to everyone listening to us on the audio as well, on Spotify and Acast and Apple Podcasts and all the other mad named podcast outlets. If you're listening on one of them, hello to you. Four Men and a Mic this evening. We are back. Danny, how are you, sir?
I am an owner of two washer dryers. 50% of which work. Nearly got that wrong, didn't I?
Nearly. But, at least you've got two. I've got none. Mine went kaboom at the weekend. So,
I'm going to get Big Bob to chuck it in the van and take it out to
Nice one. It's been a while since I've seen Big Bob. Chris, how are you, mate?
I am fabulous. As pointed out just before we went live, with my 1980s headset and my retro top. And I've got to say, the advert just as we ran at the beginning, really, really good concept. But I tell you what really made it for me is your absolute stellar voiceovering.
Mate. It's good, isn't it? Tell you what, mate. I've often thought about it. I mean, how good would it be if in the future when you ring someone up, sorry, your caller cannot be reached at the moment. Please leave a message.
Genius.
It will be good. It will be good, wouldn't it? Making his debut this evening on Four Men and a Mic because James has blown us out again. James has decided that he wants to go and watch Batman tonight. So we're going to have a word with him about that. But he's gone to watch Batman. But making his debut tonight, it's a pleasure to welcome Guna Souls. Souls, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. I can't complain. My washer dryer's working. So just got one up on there.
Thanks for that. It's a pleasure to have you here, mate. It's a pleasure to have you here. Danny, Watford v Arsenal. We're in the top four, mate.
Ah, it's only a matter of time, wasn't it? It's back on. We're going to do it. We're going to finish third because Chelsea can have all their players taken off them and they'll be sent down to the conference. To the next London derby for them will be Chelsea-Barnet. That's what I'm looking forward to. Third, it's on. Third, we're going to do third. No problem. It'll be easy.
It's
beautiful to watch. There's not a single thing about our team now that I don't like. That I like the attacking. I now swear when they score. It wasn't even that long ago when Arsenal would score and I'd sit there and go, scored. Right, make a note. Arsenal scored a goal, and I didn't give a damn. And now I'm excited as a bag of kittens, and I love it.
It is good, isn't it? Do you know what? I'm glad you said that because I'm like you as well. I am now getting excited. I can remember back in the day when you'd live for Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon to come round, football back on the telly, Arsenal playing, lovely jubbly. You'd be waiting all week to watch them. And I'm like that with them now. Look, okay, I know people are going to say, oh, you're jumping the gun, you're jumping the gun. But what I saw against Watford at the weekend, Chris, that was the closest thing to Wenger ball that we've seen since he's been gone. It was a fantastic display.
Yeah, it certainly was. Do you know what? I can't remember if it was Watford or Sheffield United, but I took my missus years and years and years ago under Wenger, and it was one of the first games that we went, and we sat in one of the upper tiers in the Emirates, and I said to her, just watch some of the football. Like when I talk about the great football, just watch the way in which we play. And I said, and when I tried to explain it to her, I said, watch how quickly the ball moves around. It's one touch football. It's bang, 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 ping, ping, ping. And I know we'll probably get into individual goals and stuff like that. But as soon as when we scored that third goal, the Martinelli one, which was Arteta little throw to Saka to throw to Odegaard, one touch, or sorry, to Cedric, one touch, Odegaard, one touch, Lacazette, one touch, Martinelli, one touch. I jumped off my seat on the sofa and I pumped the air and I just turned to my wife and I went, that's Wenger ball. Do you remember when I took you all those years ago and we won 3-0 and Rizicki had an absolute blinder and we were doing one touch football? She was like, no. I said, yes, you do. I don't remember football matches, Chris. And I said, well, that was Wenger ball. And she went, all right. That's what it felt like. It was good.
Trying to explain to your wife what Wenger ball is. I love it. I love it. Souls, man, it's been a while since we've hooked up. It's been a while since we've spoken. Mate, I mean, it's looking good at the moment, isn't it? It's looking very, very good. What was your take on the game at the weekend?
No, I agree with the panel here. It's we're finally starting to celebrate the goals. And I know it sounds a bit ludicrous with fans. Why aren't we celebrating goals? But it was just, we were watching it in the motions. We're like, oh, okay, we scored. Okay, it's 1-1. Because we never thought we'd win. Like, even though we were like 1-0 up, 2-0 up, 3-0 up, we'd always be like, there's always a calamity in the back. But now, even though that gig, I mean, to be fair, Watford could have gone that way. But it's what a lot of like sort of the Arteta inner, should we say, we're talking about in terms of what he's trying to implement. And once he gets his players, as a lot of people say, this is what we're starting to see. And today, I think Watford really showed that sort of tenacity to just be able to create something out of nothing. And they are a tough team. They're fighting relegation. They've got firepower. Yeah, there was a few players missing, but wow. That took back the times, especially, you know, the Arteta moment. I was like, that's why we're playing so good, because he's urgent. He's being urgent, and that transpires to the players. They're now being urgent, and now we're not dropping the line. We're not defending after 1-0. We're going for it. And normally when we get that sort of wake-up call at the very beginning, sort of 30 seconds in, luckily offside, our heads would have dropped, and we may have slipped up and given way many more mistakes. Imagine how it's Mustafi doing it, or like Socrates. Like, the times have turned, and it's exciting because we're talking about possibly finishing top three, when at the beginning of the season, we were all talking about top eight, or we'll be lucky to get the Conference League, we'll be lucky to get Europa League. Let's just worry about Europa League and how we're going to do that. And now we're talking about at the back end of the season to let's go get Chelsea now. That is unbelievable stuff.
Absolutely, Dan. I mean, me and Lee were talking about it last night on the podcast last night that we did. And, you know, Lee was saying, right, we're in the top four now. Let's forget about top four. We need to be trying to catch Chelsea now. And I said, you know, we'll get your opinion on it. I said to Lee, you know, I don't think there's not one player in the dressing room that's going to settle for fourth. Arteta seems to have instilled this mentality in them all, that, you know, they can go and win any game. I back them to beat anyone at the Emirates, and I back them to beat Leicester, and I'm going to back them to beat Liverpool. Yes, it's going to be a very tough game, but I really believe, and again, that is something that's come back into me now as well, that I actually believe, when I look at the fixtures now, I actually believe, yeah, we can beat Leicester, yeah, we can beat Liverpool. I mean, people must think I'm crackers. Beat Liverpool? They can be beaten. They're very, very beatable. And I think we've got the kind of team to do it.
Well, the kind of role that we're on at the moment, four wins in a row, we've been through stages. I mean, it's like if you send Mr. Muscle to the gym. He's not going to have perfect arms and legs and body all in one go, is it? We've sorted out our attack, and then sometimes the attack goes away, and then we sort out our defence and keep clean sheets, and sometimes that goes away. And the reason we've let four goals in two games, I mean, some have been calamity errors, and doesn't matter. We're not the perfect team. We are going to make mistakes. We could lose to Liverpool. We could lose to Leicester. Doesn't make any difference. We're still headed in the right direction. And those teams above us can look back at the 1998 season, the 97-98 season, when Man United were 18, 11, 12, 15 points clear, and they were looking behind them. All these teams are going to be looking behind. They're going to go, Arsenal have got 15, 14 league games to go. They've got League Cup, they've got FA Cup games. Two of the big ones are going to be in the FA Cup final. And they've got their European games. They've got so much on their plate. And Arsenal are going, yeah, we're playing every Saturday. Then we're putting our feet up, going to Dubai for the weekend, for the midweek. And no injuries, very small squad. There's hardly... And when I did the preview show, I said to our Josh, well, it's not really any point in talking about who's playing, is it? Because we know who's going to play. The only questions are Martinelli or Smith Rowe and Tomiyasu or Cedric. Everything else picks itself. Everybody knows what they're doing. Everybody's pointed in the same direction and everything's working. But there are going to be hiccups. We are not going to win every single... We can, but we might not win every single game for the rest of the season. And when it does go, people should go, fair enough, it's a learning curve. We're more going forward than we are going. Remember the old days, we'd be one step forward, three or four backwards,
yeah.
Usually watching them, like Souls were saying, watching Mustafi sliding in for a ball when there was absolutely no need to do that, or watching Socrates having no idea which way he should be facing. Those days are gone. We're headed forward. Everything's getting better and everything's looking fantastic. But people, when it does go wrong, just go, fair enough, never mind, bad day. We move, as FK says. We move.
Yeah, good old FK, yeah. We move. Chris, you know, I was watching the Arteta interview after the Watford game, and what struck me is, and I know I'm kind of repeating myself here if people were watching last night, but it's good to get the other boys' thoughts on it. After a great win, you know, you're expecting Arteta to be coming out buzzing. Well, he was buzzing, and he was very happy with what he saw. But what struck me was the way, how disappointed he was about the mistakes we made. Mm. Now, if you've got a manager like that who's going to pull you, you're going to walk in, imagine all the players walking in into the dressing room. Yeah, great win, but sit down and listen. How important to a player is to have a manager like that, do you think?
I think it's massive. But you can't go too far one way, yeah. Can you? Can you imagine if you go full Roy Keane and like every single week, you know, people, you know, you're just telling players they're crap. You know, oh, we've won 12 in a row, boss. Doesn't matter. You didn't do this. You didn't do that. And they start to switch off and they become desensitized to it. So he needs to pick his kind of moments. And all of the best managers are good at picking their moments. Wenger was... Ferguson, etc. But Wenger was a master at it, where he would have moments. I remember, I'm sure it was one of the autobiographies by one of the old back four, and it might have been Tony Adams, said that everyone came in after they were losing or drawing at half time because they were cheesed off, and they sat down, and it was a 15 minutes of half time, but Wenger spent 10 minutes just sat down as they all sort of went into each other, and then eventually they all went quiet because they were waiting for him to talk, and he was just completely calm and serene. And then went, right, this is what you've got to do in the second half. And it was calm. And there's other times where we've heard about the stories, you know, where Fabregas came out and said, I've never seen Wenger go. It was against Liverpool at Anfield. I think we beat them at Anfield. And he said, I've never seen Wenger go as ballistic as he went to us like that day. And we turned it around in the second half. So it's about picking your moments. And so providing that he is picking those moments, then for me, absolutely crack on. And what I think it shows is a relentlessness to him as a manager and an acknowledgement that felt like a very different game to an archetypal Arteta game. And the reason I say that is because that felt to me on Sunday like a basketball game, and like we didn't actually have control. And so I kind of got what Wenger was talking about, because, yeah, we were great going forward. It's a little bit shaky at times defensively. And it meant that it felt that we lacked a little bit of control in a game where he probably felt, let's control this. It wouldn't surprise me if Arteta would have preferred to have win that 1-0 with a boring, simple goal, and then nothing else happens for the entire game. Like, you score in the first 10 minutes, and then you just shut the game down, because then you've got the game under control.
Yeah, I don't know if I can agree with that now. 1-0, oh, Jesus. At 3-1, I wasn't comfortable. What would I be like at 1-0? Goodness me. Souls, on the flip side of that, right? On the flip side of that, it's great to see Arteta. It's great to see Arteta, disappointed, even though we won. In a good way, it's good to see him disappointed about the mistakes we made. But on the flip side of that, how much do you think that these players are actually into this process, if you want? Because if you ask me, Bakayoko Saka says, they all know what they've got to do. 14 cup finals, they want to finish as high as they can. I mean, he's definitely got these boys under his control, I think, don't you?
100%. I think one of the biggest things is a lot of people said he can't handle the egos and, sort of big personalities. But for me, I think a lot of people don't want to be dealing with big personalities and egos, because it's not good for the dressing room, especially with how we're sort of trying to rebuild. And when you've got a team of people believing in what you want to do, they'll give you 100%. One of the biggest sort of factors is look at Bellerin's attitude. I hate to bring him back into it, but when he said that Alexis Sanchez trains too hard, like, you're a footballer, your whole job is to train and play matches. You get paid, multi-million pounds a year to train and be ready for matches. And you look half ready every single game you've played. So for me, and it's also the self-belief these players have gotten. So as much as, yes, he's criticized them, he's maybe publicly come out and said, look, I was disappointed in X, Y, and Z. But when you talk to the players, or when you listen to their interviews, they've got this like utmost self-belief that they are the world's greatest players, that nothing can touch them. They're playing with fear, with no fear and confidence that I've never seen, like the cockiness that Ben White's showing recently. It's incredible, the way Ramsdale's riling up, rival fans and the opposition fans. I think that all transpires. And then when you see Ramsdale doing that, you're not going to want to sit there and not give 110%. Even as a fan, from people that I've heard going to the Emirates, they've said it's never rocked so much. It's never been so good in United. And that all comes from, sort of the players firstly believing in themselves, putting that performance on the pitch. And I think the turning point was, for me, West Ham 3-3, because Lacazette came out and said, we didn't listen to the gaffer in the first half, and in the second half we listened to what he said, and that's how we came back into the game. And I think that must have been a turning point within the team, or the people who believed in him, because you've got your Guendouzis, your Aubameyangs, your sort of players that they have this sort of problem, and they've always had that problem. So I do think once they started to realise that when we do what he tells us to do, we're actually winning games. And for me, if he isn't winning, that's when the belief goes. But as long as he wins and these performances stay up, those players have no reason to doubt him or to not listen to what he's got to say. And then when you hear Leroy Sane, Raheem Sterling, and the likes giving all the credit to their development to Arteta, someone like Saka is going to sit there and go, who was Sane in the Premier League, one of the best wingers in the league? Who's Raheem Sterling, arguably one of the best wingers right now in the league? So why am I not going to listen to him when he's telling me to do this, this, and this? And a lot of people telling Martinelli, he hates Martinelli, the agenda came out because he wasn't being played. But when you look at Martinelli now, so when you first seen him, the development's there to see, progress and the improvements there. It's solid. He wouldn't be the player he is without sort of Arteta's guidance. Bukayo Saka getting 13 goal and assist contributions, ESR getting 9 goals, Martinelli's the third or the fourth, under 21s with goals and assists. That's massively changed, and their belief that I think their performance is making them believe that what this guy's telling me is good for me and I need to take it on board. And I think that's all it is. And as much as they develop and they see the improvements, they'll keep listening to him.
That is a brilliant point about the West Ham game, mate. That it really is. You made me actually sit back and think, bloody hell, yeah. It has been since we've had some rocky results since then, but it's definitely got better since that 3-3.
You look at Saka at the weekend, Craig.
Yeah.
It was one-on-one. He went and got the ball off of one of their players. Looked like he roughhoused him, fouled him, got the ball off him and passed it on. He wouldn't have done that 6 or 8 months ago. The development of our players bulking up, and like we've seen with Martinelli bulking up, and it's not just about their speed. And how many players in the Premier League do you see wingers getting the ball and every single time getting past their man? If you're a left back and you're coming up against Saka, you're going to be thinking, I'm never going to win. Put two or three men on him, he'll go past all of them. And then he'll get the ball to Odegaard, who also do the same thing. And Martinelli hasn't quite refined that yet, but Martinelli's headed down the same way. And it's all through all that development. It's through because, like, with Arteta.
Chris, anything to add on that, mate? The development of the players under Mikel Arteta?
I think the it was cleverly, wasn't it, that got bowled off the ball by Saka in the lead-up to that goal. And I think what we're seeing is just a natural evolution of when you get a young side that are growing, and it all felt a little bit, I don't want to say stunted, but it felt at times awkward at the beginning of the season. And we were told, you know, give these guys time because they're only just playing together. And we're seeing the fruit of that labour. I've seen somebody in the chat say, are you guys a little bit worried about Champions League next season if we get it? I mean, you know,
I've started that question. We'll come to that. That's all right.
Can I just address it? I'm going to just address it now anyway, and just throw you off script, mate. I don't care.
Okay. One sec. Here you go. Question in from Brad Richardson, Chris. This might be a good one for you, actually.
Seeing as you've got no answer, I don't know.
Are any of the panel slightly nervous that Champions League football may be a little too soon? The money is great, but we haven't beaten any of the big boys yet. And it's a bloody good question. Thank you very much, Brad. Thank you very much indeed.
In response to Brad there, because this is interesting, these players are growing and they're growing together. They're already not the players that were as a unit that, you know, we didn't scrape. We bettered Norwich in that first game after the international break in September. And we scraped through a 1-0 and we scraped through a 1-0 against Burnley as well. And it all felt a little bit disjointed at times. But I was kind of okay with that because they're building. That was them then. This is this Arsenal team now. I know that it's not a linear progression, but if you're looking at how this team is evolving, when we get to this time next season, we're going to have a better Saka, a better Smith Rowe, a better Odegaard, a better Ben White, a better Gabriel, hopefully a Saliba. We're going to have this Matt Turner in reserve to try and chase down get Aaron Ramsdale in his position. We're going to have Nuno Tavares, who's hopefully got better with the competition with Tierney. Tierney's also up in his game as a result. We probably should have an upgrade on Xhaka. We definitely should have an upgrade on Lacazette. You know, you've got Martinelli, will be a year better and stronger in his body. So the evolution of these players, which is combined with their increasing physicality and the fact that we will physically need to add to the squad because of players leaving, I only see this as a positive. So I see the growth of the players, how they're growing in stature, in confidence and physicality, all linked to how we can make it successfully in the Champions League with a squad. Because let's not forget, you don't always play Milan, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Man City in the group stages. You know, there'll be some group stage games which we'll look at and say, maybe there's some options for rotation there. You know, we didn't, when we were in the Champions League, we didn't play our best team every single Champions League game. So in the group stages. So I think there's going to be options there. I'm less worried, but of course, we have to address that when it happens. Hopefully, touch wood, it can happen.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, do I think it's too early for this team to be competing in the Champions League? I've always said that if you're good enough to qualify for it, then you're good enough to be in it, in my opinion. Whether we go on a run on it, what worries me is obviously past Champions Leagues, when we get in the group stage, you know, we win the group stage and then we get a Bayern Munich, we get a Barcelona, we get, you know, and we get tanked and that's Champions League gone. Mems put up a brilliant video there the other day of the Bayern Munich game at the Emirates when they spanked us 5-0. The defending, Mustafi, sort of, Mustafi was just a statue, an absolute statue, and it was just shocking. Now, yes, we've gotten better in defence with Tierney, with Gabriel, with Ben White and Tommy Yasu. Souls, in the Champions League, going forward, I'm not worried. In the Champions League, at the back, are those four ready for Champions League football?
It's always a tough one. But when you're looking at sort of structures and tactics and whether they can deploy them, I feel like we've solidified our defence. We've got the third most clean sheets in the league, just behind, obviously, Liverpool and Man City. No surprises there. You know, a lot of people gave a lot of plaudits to Tuchel and his defensive methods and, you know, Mendy for being a rock at the back. And we've got a better defensive record than they do. When you look at, you know, sort of the qualms or the sort of concerns people had about Ben White, he's blown that out, you know, out the water, really. When you look at aerial duels, when you look at dominance in terms of tackles and stand tackles, and even when you look at just the structure, when we look at other sort of Champions League competing teams, you see certain profile of defenders, you know, sort of one is your dominant, which is Gabriel in this case, someone who's going to fight, rough up your, you know, sort of attackers and deal with the sort of physicality of it. Then you've got your sort of pacey, you know, sort of sweeper defender, who's your Ben White, you know, who's going to be the ball progressor, who's going to, you know, make sure that he's in behind just in case when Gabriel does step up, that he's got the pace to recover. And that's your sort of like, when I always use the analogy is PK Poyle, you know, when I use, you know, John Stones or, you know, your Ruben Neves and your Ruben Diaz, sorry, like they're the two defenders. Why? You've got one that's colossal, that's physical. Then you've got one that's there to ball progress and obviously, you know, sort of just be a bit more pacey and to recover. You've got Varane and Ramos who had different roles. So we are building a defense in the mold to be, you know, sort of champions, to be sort of even European champions. And that's why I'm not concerned. Of course, the quality is now what we need to be asking, whether they're good enough to sort of compete against your Lewandowski's, your Luis Suarez, your Messi's, your Mbappe's, and obviously the super teams that we're going to be coming across. But I think that's an expectation thing. And whether we're going into it knowing we can win it, of course, you go into every competition thinking you can win. But there's got to be a realistic expectation that, okay, if the group stage is a fairly easy one, we want to be at least getting out of it. But at the same time, there's a flip argument. Being in the Champions League brings you players that are Champions League quality. Yeah. And for me, if, let's say, Gabriel isn't to be good enough or Ben White isn't to be good enough, we can get a centre-back that is good enough because what's stopping them from joining Arsenal? We've got the history. We're one of the biggest clubs in England. And now we've got Champions League. The only thing that stopped us from getting Vlahovic was the third point, which is we didn't have Champions League, or we couldn't guarantee Champions League football. And that's why he went to Juventus over Arsenal. And that's why he was contemplating whether he wanted to go to Spurs because of how they've done recently in the Champions League. So for me, if we don't have the quality now, being in that competition will attract that quality. So it kind of works both ways. And for me, I'm not that concerned because I do think we'll get enough quality in front, as in we'll get that DM or we'll get that midfielder who can then stop everything from coming to our defence and pressurising our defence. So there are, obviously, there's always going to be reservations till we go into it because FA Cup early exit, you know, League Cup early exit, what's to say the Champions League isn't going to be an early exit? But we've got to adjust our expectations according to the teams we're playing. As long as we're competitive against the teams we should be, you know, on par. Obviously, if you're playing a Bayern Munich or a, well, the supposed Real Madrid that could be next season with Mbappe and Haaland, you're not going to sit there going, yeah, we're definitely beating them. So I think it's making the expectations real, but also understanding that the players will come in just by being in the competition.
Yeah, it's a good point now. I mean, getting into the Champions League is where you want to be to attract those kind of players. And you're dead right. Absolutely dead right. Danny, too early for these boys or, you know, get them in it and let's see what happens.
Well, we've seen the effect of COVID has had on football worldwide. There's so many teams are selling their best players. I'm just looking at the 16 teams that are currently in the Champions League that are left in it. Craig, tell me if you would be worried about playing any of these. Red Bull Salzburg from Austria, Sporting Lisbon, Benfica, Chelsea, not even worried about Chelsea, Atletico Madrid are having a terrible season, Villarreal, Inter Milan aren't what they used to be with the manager and the players gone, PSG, possibly, Bayern Munich, possibly, Man City, definitely, Ajax, no, Lille, possibly, Man United, no, Juventus, no, Liverpool, maybe, Real Madrid, possibly. Our team at the moment could take on most of those teams and either do all right or beat them. There's only, which ones of those, Craig, would you be worried about that we wouldn't be at?
Well, obviously Liverpool. You know, you'd be worrying about playing Liverpool on a Champions League night.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Liverpool.
PSG.
Liverpool.
Liverpool, Man City, PSG.
Yeah, Man City, PSG. Yeah,
I mean, probably Real Madrid because they're top of the... Real Madrid are top of the league. They're a good
team. They're not having a good season. There's so many teams.
I think the word worried.
Rubbish.
Would I be worried is the wrong word. Would I feel confident? I think would be another way of putting. Would I feel confident about playing Real Madrid? Would I feel about confident? I would.
Yeah.
I would because I like I said at the Emirates, I back us to beat anyone. So.
And that's before we've strengthened in the summer with another 200 million.
Exactly. I mean, we're reading reports today that he's got 150 million to spend and he wants two forwards, a central midfielder and a right back. But I don't know where the right back is coming from. I mean, he's got Cedric, he's got Tommy Yasu. I mean, is he thinking about a new backup right back? Is he, you know, thinking, is he going to get rid of Cedric? Who, going back to the weekend and going back to the last few games, Danny, I think he's been brilliant, Cedric.
Just shows the thing that I've said for so long when we saw Lokonga, where he played the first few games of the season, looked really good, and then he didn't play for months, and then he came in and he was shocking, giving the ball away, short passes, terrible. And that's because that was his first game back. The next game, I think he played again and he was much better. Cedric, exactly the same thing. Because this team is so tight-knit and small and he knows his best 11, you're probably not going to get in. And so when you do get a chance, because Tomiyasu has been out injured, he had one calf and then I think the other calf. And so Cedric has come from playing almost no games because there's no European games, there's no League Cup, there's no FA Cup. Normally, they're the game. You look a couple of years ago, all of these players like Cedric, they'd be doing the Europa League run so that we're not getting that. So he's coming cold and it takes a while. I mean, like we've always said, there's a difference between match fitness and fitness. You can be 100% fit and you could only be 25% match fit. And then he has shown the first couple of games he's a bit dodgy and people are on his back saying he's terrible, get him out, worse. It always cracks me up when some idiot on Twitter goes, oh, he's the worst right back I've ever seen at Arsenal. Well, you've probably been watching football for 6 months, sweetheart. So maybe stop flapping your gums and be quiet and watch football a little bit more. But he's come in and he has done really well. And he has almost at times had a decent partnership with Saka down the right-hand side. So much so that we saw against Watford, most of our attacking was down the right-hand side. Tierney and Martinelli were quite quiet on that side. And so they're obviously doing what the manager tells them to do. And it seems like he likes him doing that and going down that side. And when we have had errors, it's not really been his fault, has it?
Not really. I mean, he was involved. He was involved in two of the goals at the weekend. So I think he's doing really well. And I think, you know, credit to Mikel Arteta for showing, you know, for showing some faith in him, really. I know, look, he had to show faith in him because he's the only right back we got. But you get what I'm trying to say. Next item on the agenda is the captaincy. I feel it a little bit weird that Martin Odegaard is the one that we've all kind of said is going to be the next captain. But Kieran Tierney, Chris, keeps getting that armband.
He does, doesn't he?
He does.
This is an interesting one because the challenge with Kieran Tierney is that we're fortunate at the moment because we're only playing one game a week, but his body does never, whilst he's been in an Arsenal shirt, seemed like it can sustain regular football. And so I wonder if there's something there about that's why he might be a shout for the vice captain type thing. I don't really know why he wouldn't just give it to Odegaard now, unless he said, look, Lacazette's going to have it. I'll make a decision at the end of the season. Mm. Or is it just that Odegaard is his first season, and so he's still finding the way? I guess it really depends what type of captain Arteta wants. Does he want the chest thumping, shouting, you know, I'm going to represent you, and I'm going to be the person to grab a player by the shirt on my team and pull him away or push him away if there's a bit of a scuffle going on? Or does he want that kind of Cesc Fabregas leading by example? Don't focus too much on me chest thumping, focus more on how, you know, what I can do with football and lead by that example. I have a feeling it'll be Odegaard as well next summer. I just feel like he's captain of Norway. You know, he's growing in stature every single game. And if we keep getting the Odegaard that we're getting every week at the moment, he is an absolute shoe-in to play every week. Tierney's not, because he's slightly injury-prone. And that's the whole reason, I think, why they brought Nuno in the first place, isn't it? It's because they probably said to Nuno, look, mate, you're probably going to get 15, 20 games because Kieran Tierney's body doesn't last a whole season.
Yeah, absolutely. Hard to argue with that. I just find it strange that Martin Odegaard-Solz seems to be everyone's pick. I went for him as well. People always said, oh, I remember when I first said, people saying to me, Odegaard, but like Chris says, he's manager. He's the captain of Norway.
And he probably could be manager. He's that amazing.
Yeah, he's that amazing. He's manager and captain, but that all obviously means that he's going to bring Haaland in the summer, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, 100%. He's coming in, isn't he? He's gonna be the biggest negotiation piece on that. But now for me, I think he's quite a vocal leader, and it's quite weird because recently I've seen Tierney be more quiet. And, you know, other than the sort of passion and the sort of chest dumping, you know, and all of that. And obviously when there's a sort of an argument going on with the ref, that's when I see more of Tierney. But I feel like with Odegaard, he's more of the general on the pitch that's making things happen, who's orchestrating all the moves. And I guess it's quite a tough one because you do have, because you've got two different sides. You've got one who's going to be sort of, like a disciplined captain that's going to make sure that you're not saying too much to the referee, who's going to be sort of at the forefront of every conversation with the ref and making sure that no one oversteps their mark. That's a Tierney. Whereas with an Odegaard, it's more like, okay, this is what the gaffer's telling us to do. This is the patterns of play that we're playing. And like, he's orchestrating everything. And for me, I'm not too fussed who gets it because they both lead by example. They're both, you know, sort of respected members within that sort of dressing room. They both have an influence over players, and to a degree, you know, even Kieran Tierney, he's obviously won things with Celtic. You know, when you look at Odegaard, you know, he comes with a high reputation coming from Real Madrid. He's been in and around that sort of dressing room, so he must have some insight to give. And for me, it's just who has more influence in that dressing room is who I'd give it to. And it's a bit tough for us as fans to realize who is more respected. I'm not saying one is less respected and not listened to. But if Tierney can be that person, it's a bit like the weird thing. I know a lot of people hate him, but it's Granit Xhaka. Like, you know, he's got this weird aura about him where he seems to just be respected regardless of what he does. And for me, that's the type of thing I want in a captain, where, you know, it's the aura. It's the, I'm not going to mess with this guy. You know, like, he's going to probably beat me up if I, you know, do something. That I do like the Patrick Vieira, Roy Keane mold, because you don't mess with them. You know, if they tell you to run and press, you're going to run and press, because otherwise he's going to give you a boot in the lock in the dressing room, you know. And that's why I feel I'm more leaning towards a Tierney. But then it's the injuries for me. It's how, like, luckily so far he's not really had a long-term injury that we need to be so worried about. But that can always happen. You know, he's a game away from that happening. And it's normally 3 months out, not sort of, oh, he's only out for a week, he'll be back. So, it's tough, but it's a good predicament because there's Gabriel as well. There's Ben White that you could give a shout. There's Ramsdale that could be in a shout. So it's tough. It's really hard to pick.
Oh, hello. For those who are listening on audio, Dan's cat has just appeared and is sitting right in front of his camera.
Come on, Betty. Here she goes.
It's not the first time she's been. It's not the first time she's been on the same old Arsenal podcast.
No, at least she didn't show you her a secret place like my daughter did the other day. Turned around, gave everyone a big flash.
Dan, the captaincy. I'm with Souls, right? Because I love Kieran Tierney. I love his tenaciousness. I love the way he's offering out the Watford player on the pitch at the weekend. He's like, come on in. You know, he's offering him out outside. But then I do love the calmness, the calm approach of Martin Odegaard as well. It's a really, real tough decision. But Souls is right. It could be White, it could be Gabriel, it could be Ramsdale, it could be Odegaard, it could be Tierney. I'm still placing my bets that it's going to be Odegaard.
It doesn't matter. I remember back in the days under Wenger when we had at one point six international captains playing for the side. Doesn't matter. It's not like the old days with when Tony Adams would be there under George Graham or whether it would be Kenny Sampson under Don Howe and stuff like that, when it's probably the manager getting the captain in, right? What's going on with this lot? Because a lot of old school managers didn't really get involved in training. And then they would go, right, we're going to pick this, the team. But now Arteta gives everybody a dossier. Everybody knows what to do. It's much like when we're doing podcasts, Craig, if some of us host our own podcast, if you get cut off or you're having a sneezing fit, someone else will carry on. The more experienced you are, the more together you are. You don't need a host or you don't need a captain. Everyone knows what to do. So I think it's nowadays more ceremonial than anything else. So whether you make doesn't matter who the captain is, you're not going to shut Ramsdale up, are you?
No, very true. Yeah. Very true. I think most of the fans, and I think I would speak for most of them, Chris, is the fact that I want the Arsenal captaincy to mean something again. I want it to mean, you know, the way it meant for Tony Adams, the way it meant for Vieira. You know, the way it meant for Henri, Fabregas.
You don't get it for your birthday like Theo did.
Exactly, yeah. I was just about to come on to that. Theo Walcott got it for his birthday against Everton, I think, wasn't it?
And a coffee maker.
Yeah, and a dusty bin. But I want it to mean so. Whoever gets it, I want it to start meaning things. I want it to, you know, you're the captain of Arsenal Football Club. I want them to realise, you know, what an honour it is to be captain of Arsenal. And I think with the two of those, we will get that.
Yeah, I think what he's got to do, first and foremost, which Emery brought it in and he's kind of perpetuated this nonsense about the five captain stuff. You know, there should be plenty of leaders on the pitch, but just there's no need to sort of say, oh, well, we've got five captains and we spread it around amongst us and all of that nonsense. No, don't do that. Just pick your captain. Pick a vice captain and say the rest of them are going to be leaders on the pitch anyway. So this guy is going to be the guy that's the embodiment of us, but as a team. But we've got plenty of other players who can fill in. And when you've got the likes of Ramsdale as well, like you said, Dan, when you've got the likes of Ramsdale screaming at you from the back, he's not captain, but you know he's one of the leaders of the team. It can only bode well. The other thing that I want to see is that, and this is a, sorry, I'm going to have to go match day fan on everyone now. Sort out the bloody program notes, because the silly thing they're doing this season where they don't have captain's notes, what they have instead is one person from the club does a little section. It's like, no, I'm a football fan. I'm a traditionalist. I want the captain to give me some thoughts.
I'm like,
I know probably after time, they get somebody to ghostwrite it, but I don't care. I want to feel like it's come from that player's mouth. Sorry,
Ron. Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I can remember as a young kid. You can remember as a young kid when you first started going to football, you know, getting a programme, and the first page, you know, you open it, and the first page it's the manager, second page, captain, and then the rest of it's full of adverts. But like, you're dead right. That connection. The connection to the fans, to the captain, you know, the fans to the captain to the team back through the captain, back to the fans is so, so important. And I think it's really coming to fruition at Arsenal at the moment. I think that fan, what's the word I'm looking for? The fan connection with the players is starting to come back. And we're seeing that at the Emirates with the atmosphere, the way the team is playing, the way they're talking about the manager, the way the manager's talking about the fans, this, that, and the other. It's all coming together. And I absolutely love it.
Can I also just add on top of that, like when we're going behind in games at the Emirates, there is no groaning. Like the Wolves game went behind and everyone's just like, come on, we can do this. Come on, lads. I mean, it probably helps that, you know, it was 10 minutes into the match. And so there's a whole big sort of swathe of the match still to go. But that really is stuff that we haven't seen for years, decades, maybe.
Absolutely. Can we talk about the red kit, Dan? The red kit, red top, red shorts, red socks. Unpopular opinion. I quite liked it.
Oh, you're wearing red now. Red is a colour I don't wear. I don't wear black, I don't wear white, and I don't wear red. Other than that, I'll wear... In fact, once I bought a pink T-shirt, and Sean said I look like a blancmange. That made me sad. So there's I've got a picture of it somewhere. I'll share it on Twitter later. There is no need for that because it didn't colour clash with any of the stuff that they were wearing. Did I think they were black and yellow stripes with black shorts and yellow socks, possibly. I have no understanding why they would. I don't even know where they got it from. Because normally you mix and match from the rest of your... If anything, it should have been red shirts with blue shorts because from the third kit. So I don't know why they've got it. I don't know why they did it. I don't know what the need for it was, and I didn't like it. It put me off.
All felt a bit Liverpool, didn't it?
It did.
A bit Liverpool.
Yeah.
Do you know, there's a great stat about that kit, and I don't know if you were listening last night, don't cheat. We've worn that red kit. How many times have we worn that red kit?
You mean a general all red?
All red.
Not
including shorts and stuff? Or...
Yep. Red shirt, red shorts, red socks.
I'm only about 20 minutes into the show, so I didn't hear it. Didn't we play an FA Cup final all in red once?
Vaguely
in the 70s.
Whole of the history of Arsenal, or are you talking like a certain time period?
I'm talking in the last... Okay, it's the last 45 years.
Oh.
None.
Three times in 45 years.
One or three as well.
In all red. Three times in 45 years. What's all that about?
Have you got when they were?
No. I'm not that good, Dan. Theory.
New merch on Arsenal.com. That's all it is. That's all.
That's it. Boy. Yeah, red socks, red shorts. Come and buy them at Arsenal.com. We're not getting paid.
No, red shorts. Expect some bad news to release by the club at any time now. They've preempted it with some new bit of merch.
Exactly. Danny, what about Arteta's assist for the third goal? It was quite good, wasn't it?
I think we have to look at that.
Do you think, looking back at it, do you think Watford have got a moan there? Do you think they've got something to moan about?
Yeah, you've got to look at these things if the tables were turned. And I'd be bloody furious first of all, Roy wouldn't have managed to catch the ball. It hit him in the face and he'd have ended up flat on his bum. And then he wouldn't be able to throw it to him. But that is kind of a little bit quick. I know we told the ball boys have in the history of Premier League football slowed games down, sped games up, people have got annoyed with them and stuff like that. But I don't ever remember a manager running out of his area, getting the ball, doing the quick throwing. If that, we probably wouldn't have, that led to a goal, didn't it? Because he ran down the
there, though, Dan. I'll just stop you there. He didn't run out of his technical area.
Oh,
he was actually standing where the ball went. Oh, so
I didn't know that. I've not even seen their second goal yet. I was busy doing something.
My look on it is that he didn't run to the ball. He was standing where the ball went out. But he was out of his technical area, Dan. He was standing out of the technical area. So manager outside the technical area, throws the ball to his player. Player throws the ball, three touches, goal.
We did get the double yellow when we shouldn't have done, so maybe they had a little bit of a leeway with this, and they probably called it the Arteta rule. You know, if you touch the ball outside of your area as a manager, it's the game gets stopped and get a drop ball or something like that, or you get told off for it. But it's yet another Arsenal first. That'll go down in the history books.
Yeah, absolutely.
For Watford, should feel a little bit hard done by, because that did lead to a goal, didn't it?
It did. I mean, I think, Chris, if it was us, we'd all be roaring, wouldn't we? We'd all be, you can't do that.
You know what? I'd like to think no, because, like, if it had been a Watford throw-in, then the ball boys probably would have thrown it to him quickly. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander, as far as I'm concerned. And, frankly, I just think it was perfectly acceptable for him to just be chucking the ball at him. If the ball boy isn't going to do it quickly enough, fine, I'll do it myself. We want to see the football on the pitch. We don't want to see it on the side. So, yeah, I'm completely biased and probably no one's ever going to change my view on it. I just thought it was a brilliant bit of action. And I saw somebody, or I heard somebody say it was a pre-assist, but I'm not sure it was a pre-assist because wasn't it sort of a pre-assist? So he can't even claim it as one of those... as one of those on his stats.
Well, a pre assist. I mean, the pre assists started to arrive at Arsenal when Mesut Ozil was here. When he arrived, yeah. Wasn't it? It was the Ozil teens used to say, "Oh, but he pre assisted." Yeah, you know, I can remember. They remember those days. What fun. Souls. What would you? If that had been the other way around, what are you saying, mate? What if that had been, not Roy Hodgson, because poor old boy, he probably wouldn't have been able to, like Dan says, bend over and pick it up. But let's say that was a North London derby and it was Conte come, out of his technical area and he throws it to Sun and Sun goes down the pitch and crosses it to Kane and Spurs score.
Well, in that instance, yeah, I'd be pissed. I'd be like, yeah, we just conceded. And let alone how we conceded, I'd be like, why did we even concede in the first place? To be honest, when I was watching the game, I didn't even notice it. If I'm going to be completely honest, it was after when people pointed it out on Twitter.
Same as me.
So I'll be completely honest. I wouldn't be annoyed if it happened. Now, I mean, that's being in hindsight, but things go for you, things go against you. We should have got a penalty. That could have been a goal. So either way, karma sort of balanced things out. So that's the way I see it. But I don't know. I think you just get your luck and sometimes you don't. And
absolutely.
When you get it, you've got to ride it. And I guess we do need to stop the conspiracy of referees sometime because things have gone for us in some occasions. I don't care. It was a brilliant goal. You can't write that goal off for how beautifully
absolutely.
It was done. One touch in the air. And even Ben, I can't even remember who their keeper was anymore, but even he was
Ben Foster,
he knew from his face he was diving the other way, and Martin Daniel was like, "Nah, fam, I'm going the other way." And he was, and you could just see it in Foster's face. He was like, "I got beat." When you see a keeper say, you can see it on their face, "Nah, that was just I just got beat. There's nothing I could do." That's the best goal for me.
Yeah, trust me, as a goalkeeper, as a goalkeeper, when you're beaten, and there's just not even point even trying to go for it. Just all right, you can have that one.
That Arteta's going to come out the next game with a towel tucked in his shorts like a bartender to give the ball a dry down just in case it happens again? Then we know we're in trouble.
But the goals,
he's wearing studs.
The goals that we scored against Watford were beautiful, weren't they? Every single, all three were absolutely beautiful. And I remember the third one going in. I made all my kids jump. I jumped up, I said, record that, and watch that every night before you go to bed, because that is how you play football.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All of them, Dan. From the first one, the beautiful little flick from Odegaard. People are saying, did he mean it? Didn't he not mean it? Of course he meant it. The composure of Saka to get in the box and lay it back to him. Brilliant finish, 1-0. The second goal. Again, one touch, beautiful stuff. Foster goes the wrong way. And then the third one to top it all off. I mean, absolutely beautiful. Arteta ball is alive and well.
I'm not sure which one was the... I'm just looking. Oh, Martinelli was the third one. The third one was just absolutely stunning. I mean they tried to do the same sort of thing with their one, though, didn't they? And they scored a stunner like that. But it's... I was saying, Sean and Sean's mum and my mum were here on the day, and I said, I can't remember the last time that we scored brilliant goals, individual bits of skill, linking up skill, just the whole way that everything is flowing. And every time we attack, we think, yeah, could be a goal here. And you don't think it's going to come through to someone and they're going to put it wide. They're not going to go full Giroud and go 16 games without a goal. Lacazette's job isn't to score goals. We see that. Lacazette's job is like Pep at Man City. He's not playing as a striker. Everyone around him is the one scoring the goals and setting the stuff up. I mean, for Lacazette, I think he's got 4 assists in 8 games. So at the age of 30,
He's actually got more assists this year than Bruno Fernandes.
Well, that's not hard. He ain't got anything really, has he, apart from temper tantrums?
Oh, yeah, but Bruno Fernandes is world class.
Oh, yeah. His days of going to Barcelona are long gone. He'd probably have to go back to Portugal. But yeah, we see that for Lacazette to adapt his game at 30 and to get grief for it and to be captain and all these things together, and it's working. And we have said for a while, could we play a formation like Man City with no strikers? And it seems that we almost can. And even when Eddie comes on, Eddie plays probably wide left. Martinelli is a striker. He's playing on the left, or he can play on the right. And then, like we saw when Man City played Man United at the weekend, 92% possession. At times, that's the direction we're going to go in. That's the thing that they need to work on, is keeping the ball, keeping the possession. And the turnaround we've seen from Partey, he got Arsenal Player of the Month, didn't he?
He did. I'd have to have a steward's inquiry about that, I'm afraid.
Odegaard.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely correct. Yeah.
But it's nice that it's the fact that he's doing it and he is having back-to-back good games. And Xhaka, I saw one of your tweets, Souls, where you're saying that Xhaka is going to be a lot harder to replace than some Arsenal fans think. Xhaka's working his ass off, and also Xhaka has changed his position. The two of them are swapped. Xhaka used to be the one that stayed back and swept up, but now Xhaka's getting a little bit more forward. The only thing I would moan about is them constantly shooting when they know they keep going full John Jensen, and I don't like that. But it's the whole thing. I'm excited. I want more games. I want us to be playing 5 times a week, Craig.
Can you imagine when Partey scores against Liverpool from 30 yards?
Spurs.
Or Spurs.
Or in Danny the last Rose minute. Against Spurs.
In the last minute of injury time. Oh!
My hope is that when we get to that Spurs game, it won't matter, because it'll be right at the end of the season and we'll be 7 points clear in top 4. So I can just sit there and have my cousin and my mates who are Spurs fans messaging me going, we've scored with whatever it is. I don't care. We're top 4. So you do what you like.
Yeah.
That's my personal hope.
Yeah. Do you know what? It is my personal hope that when that derby, it's so funny you say, when that derby comes around, I want it to be... A derby against Spurs is never meaningless, but you know where I'm coming from. It would be fantastic just to sit back and watch a derby. Yeah, I'd be pissed if we lost, but just for them all to be like you said there, just to be texting. Are you in the Champions League? Oh no, you're not. Nah. Oh, okay. Have a nice day. Yeah, I'd love that to come back. What are you saying, Dad?
In the history of football, has a team gone Champions League, Europa League, Conference League, no league? And that's the way they're going. What a drop. I mean, they should be called Stats FC, because the only glory they get is by tweeting absolute nonsense about stats.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I'm not even going to entertain the discussion that I've seen on social media today. Sorry, not entertaining it at all. If you, that kind of debate wants me to go downstairs and stick...
your head in a broken washing
machine.
In my
eyes, yeah. Just washing with bleach. Oh, yeah. Absolutely unbelievable. But anyway, look, we'll let them have their... we'll let them have their say. One stat left to talk about. Arsenal were the fourth side, only the fourth side since the Premier League began, to have 3 players, 21 or under, to score 5 times in the Premier League. The other teams that done it were Leeds, 98-99, Manchester United, 95-96, and Chelsea, 2019-00.
You win nothing with kids.
Old Alan Hansen. God, I tell you what. I wonder, did he ever sit back and think, I shouldn't have said that, should I? But that, testament to Mikel Arteta again for showing the faith in these young lads, Chris.
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to make a prediction. 10 by the end of the season. You said 5. We're going to have 3 players under 21 on 10 goals by the end of the season. Balls on the line. Let's do it.
Be nice. Souls, that's a nice, it's a nice stat, isn't it? I don't like really going into stats because, you know, stats, the only stats I worry about are the points on the board. But looking at it and reading it again, you know, it's just showing where, you know, where we're going and you know, and how far these young players really have come on.
No, 100%. I think when you think about the criticism they got coming into the season, you know, Bukayo Saka can't score goals. He doesn't have output. He doesn't have end product. You know, same with ESR. He made his career at Chelsea, you know, all of that. And then Martinelli, the only moment he's got is the run he did to slip Conte. They've turned that around. A lot of opinions have changed. And for me, that if they're doing it at sort of 20, you know, 19, 20, what will they become? This is just the beginning where they're learning. They're still developing their craft and perfecting what they need to do. And they're getting, well, nearly, I think all three of them are nearly double figures sort of for goal and assist. I think Martinelli's the only one who doesn't have that. You know, ESR's on 9 goals, you know, Saka's on 8, I believe, or 7.
Yeah.
So, 8. So, you know, he's 2 away from being double figures there. And then Martinelli's not far away. But when you think he missed half a season, you know, being in and out of the team, it's brilliant to see how ruthless they are, because that's one of the things we missed in Arsenal was players who wanted to be killers, you know, didn't just sit for 1-0s or 2-0s or, you know, just like 2-1s and then just sit back on it. They want to keep going. They want to, and even when you listen to them, they're like, oh, I'm trying to train on this and develop this. You know, when you look at Bukayo Saka from last season, his right foot is so much better. He scored, I think, 2 or 3 of his goals have come from his right foot and his crossing, and he's become unpredictable. ESR always had that in him to be two-footed and use both his feet. Now it's just Martinelli, whether he can develop that and, you know, kind of follow on that. I just think it's incredible to have 3 players under 21, you know, arguably fighting for sort of top positions within the Premier League, let alone youngsters. You can put Bukayo Saka up there as one of the best Premier League wingers right now. Not the best, but arguably one of the best. Obviously, you've got your Salahs and your Manes and your Mahrezes, who probably are a little bit better. But he's fighting up there. And, you know, even Martinelli, to get Jurgen Klopp coming out and saying you're generational, it is a big statement. And to go and back that, I'm excited. Like, let's put it as it is. You know, Josh Kroenke said it. Yeah, he's got us, man. We are excited to see what this team can become.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. The excitement is back, like we all said earlier on. The excitement is back about this current crop of Arsenal players. Let's hope that Mikel Arteta can keep them all together. I'm pretty sure he will, because the way, from where I'm looking, they all look pretty invested in what it is he wants to do there. Lads, we've just hit the hour mark. It's been an absolute pleasure to sit here tonight and talk about Arsenal with you, as always. Thank you very much indeed. Danny boy, what's going on with the Bergie Wonderland this week? Anything coming up?
Yeah, midweek, Wednesday. I'm not sure what time, probably about 7:30, 8:30. It's Nick and me, and I think Femi said he's coming on, and there might be one other. And later tonight, in about 3.5 minutes, I'm over on the Arsenal over and over and over and over again with Rich and a couple of others and Dorsey. And someone whose name I don't remember. So I'm going to be over there after. Yeah, it's a happy time to be a Gooner, Craig.
Hey, isn't it just? Isn't it just? Chris, a blog in the morning, sir? A blog in the morning? Where can people find it?
Yes, suburbangooners.com. I did a piece today about Kieran Tierney, actually, which was
funny that.
About
Harry wrote a piece about Kieran Tierney yesterday as well. I missed your one. I'm going to have to read that.
Yeah, I didn't copy him. I didn't know he'd written it. So now it looks like I've copied him, but I have to write about something else now.
Copy and paste. Yeah. And Souls, man, you've got your own YouTube channel on the go as well, haven't you, mate? Where can people find you?
Yeah, literally just Gooner Souls on Twitter. Pretty much post anything that I'm doing on there. And a lot of unpopular opinions now as well. You know, especially the Granny Shackle ones riled a few names. And me saying, you know, Bukayo Saka is the best young English player right now, it's riled a few rival fans as well. So that it's been interesting. So you can follow me on them platforms there.
get over and follow the lads on Twitter. Follow them. You know, you're not going to be disappointed. Thank you very much to everyone who stayed with us and watched us live. Over 130 of you, Peak. So thank you very much indeed. Thank you for all the questions. Thank you for all the comments in the chat box. If you're listening on audio, thank you very much to you too. We are back on Thursday night at 8:30 with Amanda and the Always Arsenal show. She is interviewing actor Terry Stone. If you don't know who Terry Stone is, Terry Stone played, I've forgotten his name, but he was in Rise of the Foot Soldier. The one with the big blonde wig, that's him. And I think he was one of the main characters in the film Once Upon a Time in London. Very, very good actor. Amanda will be interviewing him on Thursday night at 8:30. So tune into that one. We'll see you again on Monday for the same old Arsenal podcast. The same motley crew. Let's hope we'll be talking about 3 points again. Let's hope we'll be talking about Spurs losing. Until we see you again, take care of yourselves and each other, and up the Arsenal.
Sports Social Podcast Network.